Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Does God really command Christians to give 10% of their income to the church? Well, my friend, the command of 10% was under the Old Testament law of Moses. In the New Testament days, New Testament meaning new covenant or new agreement between God and people, in the New Covenant days, those very specific Old Testament regulations, and there were tons of them, animal sacrifices, other codes of obligation, they simply do not apply now. They don't apply today, at least not in the exact same rigorous fashion. I do believe we should give to our churches and support our pastors. Let me say that again, just in case one of you is having a cardiac arrest, but I said you didn't have to tithe. Let me say it again. I do believe we should give to our churches and support our pastors. If anything, I would encourage you to donate more than 10%. But my friend, that is an encouragement, not an order, just as the New Testament offers an encouragement, not an order. The New Testament teaching on giving does not provide a specific obligatory figure. In the book of 2 Corinthians, a letter penned by the Apostle Paul, he said the following: each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Meanwhile, related to money in the church, you may be wondering how churches are holding out these days. How are they making ends meet financially? How are they staying within their budget? How are they maintaining their staff? How are they paying the rent on their building or the mortgage on their building if they own it? Well, of course, some are faring better than others, but as far as the state of Nevada is concerned, I think your old pal Bob could at least offer a little guidance there. Instead of passing the offering plate, they should just set up slot machines in front of every pew. Yeah, of course I mean socially distanced slot machines, 6 feet apart slot machines, perhaps a mask on each slot machine. Not only will the churches make money, they'll be able to stay open as well. Yes, our Supreme Court, which always upholds our Constitution, they just rejected a pushback from the churches of Nevada. I'm reading from Fox News. The Supreme Court on Friday denied an appeal by a Nevada church to allow additional worshipers to join in-person services based on capacity amid the coronavirus pandemic. Nevada has placed a 50-person cap on all places of worship, no matter the capacity of the building, as a part of the state's coronavirus restrictions. But casinos, along with other businesses such as restaurants and movie theaters, may permit up to 50%, not 50-person, 50% capacity, allowing casinos to grant access to hundreds of patrons at a time. Justices Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh all issued dissenting opinions rejecting the constitutionality of the decision. This is a simple case. Under the governor's edict, a 10-screen multiplex may cost 500 moviegoers, or may host, rather, he says, 500 moviegoers at any time. Those were the writings of Justice Neil Gorsuch on Friday. He went on to say, in Nevada, it seems it is better to be in entertainment than religion. Maybe that is nothing new, but the First Amendment prohibits such obvious discrimination against the exercise of religion, he added. Nevada lawmakers had urged the Supreme Court to reject the appeal, arguing the claims of religious discrimination were false and unverified. That was from Fox News on Friday. Of course, that's Nevada. We're here in good old sunny California. We've gone light years beyond that in California. It started with complete shutdowns. Then we were allowed, for a very brief period of time, a reopening. Opening much the way opening the cap on a pill bottle, but leaving the safety seal intact is an opening, so you can't really get to the pills. Then after that, we were told not to sing. Now we're told to close down again. Now, 2 weeks ago, when we were in the middle of the singing controversy, you may recall I spoke quite clearly about our dictatorial governor, both over the air and on Facebook. Here are some responses. The first is a dissenting response. This guy's Joseph. And Joseph comes across as a man who's extremely sure of himself and somebody who really wanted to educate me and teach me a thing or two. Joseph writes, "The First Amendment of the United States Constitution says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Has Congress passed a law prohibiting your right to worship? So far, Congress has passed no law prohibiting you from practicing your faith, nor has Congress passed a law prohibiting you from assembling peacefully or prohibiting any other rights under the First Amendment rights. Thus, if the other branches of government, such as state or local law enforcement, says you can't do such things, then in all truth, it is not at all a violation of your First Amendment rights. Thus, because Congress never passed a law that violates the First Amendment of the governor saying churches must remain closed, is not a direct violation of your First Amendment rights. I have studied the U.S. Constitution, and I am very familiar with this argument. Since Congress never passed any laws," you notice how often he keeps telling me it's not Congress. I think he really wants me to get that. "Since Congress never passed any laws prohibiting your First Amendment rights, you have no reason to complain. But if Congress does indeed in the future pass such a law, I will stand right next to you in D.C. and bring down such government as the Declaration of Independence says to do, which was written so long ago." All right, let me respond to this. Joseph, since you went out of your way to tell me that you have studied constitutional law, I will give you the benefit of the doubt and assume you are familiar with the Supremacy Clause. Article 6, Clause 2. "The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby." Now, I believe in state rights, and I believe states can pass different kinds of laws, and different states do have different laws. But what they're saying here, Joseph, is that state governments cannot pass laws that violate the federal government. Governors and judges are not supposed to be making laws at all, as a matter of fact. That is the job of the legislature. In the case of a state, it's the job of the state legislature. So on two accounts, Governor Newsom is in the wrong. First of all, it is simply not his place to make up laws, period. The legislature is supposed to do that. Second, even if he had done this, and he hadn't, but even if he had done this in conjunction with the Sacramento legislature, it would still be unconstitutional to override the federal First Amendment. Now, I know the lingo. They can claim it's a special emergency authority in order to keep us safe. Yeah, well, when they tell police to stand down, and when they let criminals out of jail who will spread the coronavirus, not to mention the fact that they're just spreading good old-fashioned plain criminality, he loses that argument about emergency and safety. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I made another comment about the Constitution. I was pointing out an irony and a hypocrisy of people claiming constitutionality when they want to sue and when they want to get judges to override something that Trump does or whatever. But now these same people embracing the counterculture movement, notice how they're talking about just shredding the Constitution permanently. Notice the hypocrisy. The Constitution's fine if some federal judge sides with them. Meanwhile, they're talking about shredding the Constitution. And obviously, I went on and on about that a couple of weeks ago. Well, in response to that, Teddy says, "The people that want to dismantle the Constitution have no idea what they're doing. They can't even imagine what life would be like under communist rule." You're quite right, Teddy. You're quite right. But there's a reason this happens. It's like the ingredients of a cake mix. Mob mentality and brainwashing over a period of many years at many universities. By the time victims realize what was done with them, it will be too late. That is, it will be too late unless God intervenes or enough people wise up or both. I do believe God can intervene. I do believe people could wise up. I do believe both could happen. If that happens, then many of us will be grateful. Many others, having failed that round, will, however, keep trying. Either way, we are in the midst of a civil war. You can deny it. You can put your head in the sand like an ostrich. I'm not telling you to go out and get a gun or do anything, but you need to know you are in a civil war. You can say, oh, I'm being optimistic. I don't think it'll happen. It's happening. It's happening all around you. On the same point, David says, I think it's more sinister than that. George Soros and his Open Society are well-versed in what would happen. He's been teaching this since the 70s. Soros and his Open Society were instrumental in the Venezuelan Revolution. The very things the protesters are demanding were demanded by Venezuelan protesters. The destruction of statues, history, and culture were all part of Venezuela's revolution. None of this is new. Yes, David, that's very true. The architects are evil and calculating, but it's not just the architects. We have the architects. We also have the blind sheep who are deceived. And finally, many politicians and other leaders in other fields who understand exactly what is happening, perhaps don't even like it, but are simply too cowardly to speak up and or too much in love with their own power to do anything about it. Well, of course, I saved the greatest comments of all for our recurring guest, National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg. Mike, welcome back to our program.
Well, Bob, thanks for having me on again. It's an honor to be here. I will just, before I plunge into a couple of talks I wanted to address, I will comment is the constitutional expert, Joseph. He did miss one sort of thing that's going on is we have executives. Executives are not supposed to be issuing laws.
Yeah.
So that's number one.
Yeah, I mentioned that to him.
And
yeah.
Two is unelected healthcare officials. These, these people who aren't even elected. And they're making these laws and creating regulations that have the force of law.
Well, of course, they're given that that cue from the governors and mayors. But yeah, you're right. And nationally, I don't recall voting in Anthony Fauci to set national policy. The whole economy closed down around this guy.
Well, one thing that is good to remember, and it's easy to lose sight of, is and President Trump's response has not been perfect, but I don't believe any other president would have done better.
Well, and Trump was issuing guidelines.
Exactly.
Trump
that was
never,
my point.
Yeah, and there were states that didn't go along with all the guidelines, and that was fine. But the ones that put teeth in it were the governors, and to some degree, the mayors in places are even worse than the governors. The governors aren't bad in Texas, but boy, some of those mayors in some of the cities of Texas have been horrible. So,
and remember that President Trump staunchly defended the governors and public officials that put in more moderate forms that did not adhere strictly to the federal guidelines. He did support those governors and made those decisions.
But the blue state governors were just salivating. This virus was the best news they ever could have heard because it was a Trojan horse for their socialism. And I say this all the time, ladies and gentlemen, my backup for that is just listen to them. They've freely admitted we are going to take this crisis. We are going to use it. We're going to rebuild. So they say this. And so nobody's making this up. This isn't some conspiracy theory. This is just me listening to what they're actually saying.
Yes. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to briefly go through a number of things that science and data is now telling us about coronavirus that maybe we didn't discuss last time. And then I have some really what I think is good news. But one,
good just news. You have good news?
Yes.
I want to hear that, ladies and gentlemen. And you heard it here first. There is actually some good news. Well, you will hear it here first.
Okay. Well, here's some good news. And you'll appreciate this, Bob, is multiple studies now. I mean, multiple studies have come out and they've said asthma is not one of the major contributing factors to mortality to COVID-19. In fact, it's not even in the top 10. So asthma in some studies have shown to be people that are on regular medication for asthma do a little bit better than better than.
In fact, I had asthma for years, but I'd keep going in and get it tested. They go, well, you don't quite have asthma. You have borderline. Once they told me I actually had asthma, I'm on regular asthma steroids. I have an inhaler. And so it actually has, and that stuff, it is, it's keeping you healthy.
So. And so that's, so that is good because there's an awful lot of people with asthma out there. And this is really good news. So that is good news.
All right. We asthmatics are delighted. We still don't want to see us lose our republic over a disease with a 99% recovery rate, though.
Yes. And just to get an example, let's, and I did this last month, but I'm going to do it again. It's worth doing. Now, and unfortunately, what the way people talk about it is if you get COVID-19, you're doomed at the minimum to a serious illness or possibly death. And that is just so far from the truth. So let's just take a, if you're a woman, you're 75 years old, a big study that just came out of the University of Stockholm late June, you know, comes up with this, you have a 51% chance of surviving the illness if you're 75 years old and a woman and you don't have any serious underlying health conditions. Now, for people with serious underlying health conditions, if you're a woman and you have these comorbidities, so to speak, you still have a 97% chance of surviving. Guys, you know, it's a little bit worse. Instead of 99.8 for men who are 75, it's like 99.5% chance of surviving. However,
that's not as good as a woman's, but that doesn't sound all that bad either.
However, when you get to having a serious underlying health condition, it drops to 95.65%. So, I mean, at that point in time, you're starting to get a little bit worried, 95.65%. And if you're and I'm going to talk why this is important in a second. And if you're over 80 years old and you have serious underlying health conditions and you're a guy, then the chances of surviving are about 80%. So that means there's a 20%.
So again, just so we're clear, when you're saying 95%, you mean chance of survival, not
right.
Chance of dying.
Chance
so,
of surviving. And then
I think these days people just hear chance of dying no matter what you say.
Right. And then if you're over 80 and you have serious underlying conditions and you're a guy, it's about an 80% survival rate, which means that, you know, you're starting to get up into a dangerous risk category. I mean, 20%. Now for women, it's only 8% at that category. So women, as we've known from the beginning, for whatever reason, women are less vulnerable to the coronavirus, especially. But the thing
you know,
is,
women get a lot of breaks for a lot of things.
Yes,
they
do. So
I grew up in the '60s and in high school, we were all scared to death of Vietnam and the draft. But the women had nothing to worry about.
Yeah, but they still lost brothers and fathers.
Oh, no, of course, okay. Of course.
And, but so that's very important to keep in mind is that for people under age 50, Stanford Medical Center did a study. Basically, this is in quotes, the chance for people of that age having serious illness or dying is infinitesimally small. The Stockholm study described it as effectively zero. And if you're under 20, let's say you're under 20 or if you're 15, you're in that range, it really, we've had like 30 deaths in that age category throughout the entire United States. So let's just keep it in perspective, you know, when we're talking about, you know, everything there. So really, that should be considered good news, but that's not really ever talked about. You know, it really sounds like everybody, you know, that gets it is going to die. So that now, some more good news is that Dr. Birx, you know, just a couple of days, and if you can go and look at yourself, she says that it looks like the cases and therefore the hospitalizations and the deaths are plateauing in Florida and Texas and Arizona and California. So what we're going to see here is if that happens, these states won't come anywhere near New York levels. They're going to still be a small fraction of the deaths per 100,000.
But isn't it interesting how the media is portraying Florida as this horrible thing in Texas? But because it is spiking up in terms of people catching it, but it is not spiking up in deaths. And of course, more people are being tested. And the only thing that I've ever heard two doctors at a time agree about with this thing is it is contagious. So yes, they're getting it, but it can be very misleading because I think people hear they're getting it and they take that to mean that all of their lives are in danger.
Right. Now, there was an uptick in deaths. For example, it was running about 60 per day, and it upticked in Florida and Texas and even Arizona.
But was it with those people with the special conditions and ages?
Well, all the deaths are related to that. Yeah. All the deaths are related to age and special conditions. I mean, There's a few, there's a small percentage that are not. But if you hear about an uptick in deaths, it's guaranteed that uptick in deaths is going to be among the people that are very old and in frail health, like 90% of them. And then the small percentage that are people that are younger are people that have really, really serious underlying health conditions, not just a mild case of asthma or a mild case of diabetes. These are people that have very serious underlying health conditions, the kind of people that, by the way, that we're watching out and being very careful already because they knew they were vulnerable to the flu or to the measles or to anything else out there.
But there's more to it than that. There are people that are dying of other causes, and if they also had COVID, they're writing that they died of COVID. I kid you not, I have a friend who had somebody, who a friend of a friend, they died in a car accident. It was listed COVID when they died. Because and they did have COVID, but that's not how he died. He died in a car accident.
If you were in a hospice care, dying of something else, and you also died,
get COVID.
COVID-19. So, I mean, if you're in hospice, that seems pretty clear. So,
it's now, like our country's just suddenly discovered that people die from diseases. Next year during the flu season, I'm telling you, even if we have a vaccine, even if COVID's no longer in it, people are going to go, whoa, jumping Jiminy, flu season, we better shut down the schools again. I'm telling you, Mike, that's going to happen.
I hope not.
It's going, well, not in every state. Here in California, you just never know.
Anyway, it's so for a significant portion, I would say a majority of the population, COVID-19 is of no more risk to them than flu. And for a significant portion of the population, like age 25 and under, it's far less dangerous to them than the flu. So, but the really, really big news is that multiple studies are coming out. And I thought about this back in March. I said, well, really, is this population really wide open and we're just this blank slate that the COVID-19 can come and terrorize? Well, it now turns out that the patterns we've seen of infection and fit very closely with a model that says that a significant portion of the U.S. population and the world population already had significant resistance to COVID-19. And when I say significant, one study said up to 80% of the people have significant resistance and or immunity to COVID-19. And that doesn't come from the antibodies. That comes from T cells, the T cell immunity. And this T cell immunity comes from folks that have already had MERS, which is a coronavirus, or SARS, a coronavirus. But something I recently came to understand is there's like 4 or 5 other viruses commonly circulating in the population that are classified under colds. And if you look at them under the microscope, they look like coronaviruses because they are. And they are now, the studies are saying that those themselves have created T cell based immunity for a huge portion of the population. 80% is the high estimate. And this fits in with the model of how it's been spreading. For example, on the Diamond Princess, they had a lot of doctors and have not been surprised by how many people got it. They've been surprised by how few people got it. It only went to 20, 25% of the people. Well, that would fit in with a model that says that a high percentage of people are highly resistant to either be immune or to get very mild cases, asymptomatic cases. The same thing with USS aircraft carrier here in town. They just pulled back into port here too in San Diego, actually. It's down here. That was the Lincoln?
Mike, don't make me sing over the air while you're looking.
Okay.
We don't want to get there.
Okay. But bottom line is it's 4,800 crew members. They ended up with 1,253 cases. So it turned out to be about a 23-24% case rate. Once again, there was no reason it should have been greater than that, but that's probably because of this T-cell immunity. And T-cell immunity is also the other thing about it is it's much longer term, whereas antibody immunity a lot of times will fade away and not be detectable after 2 to 3 years. T-cell immunity can be in existence 12, 13, 15, 16, 17 years later.
That is interesting because growing up, I guess more of us heard about the antibodies. And that is interesting, the difference between T cell and antibody immunity.
And they work differently. The antibodies, they attach themselves to the viruses and make it so that physically the spikes cannot get into the human cells. So they physically block the cell things. The T cells, there's two different types. There's the helper and the killer T cells. The helper T cells boost up the B cell production, and the B cell production is what produces the antibodies. So what's happening is if a person has significant T cell resistance, along comes the coronavirus. It gets in there. The T cells recognize. They start boosting up the B cell production, which produces the antibodies. At the same time, the killer T cells, if they find an infected human cell with the antivirus, they go, they wrap around it and they destroy that cell so it can no longer affect in there. So it's got a double-barreled effect on this. And this is happening. And this is something, by the way, if you were in the field, and I'm not in the field, otherwise I would have been talking more thoroughly about this 4 months ago. But if you're in the field in epidemiology, you knew this. You knew that there was a very good chance that there was a significant innate resistance in the U.S. population to this. But you didn't say anything about it because you wanted the public to comply with these very stringent healthcare and measures. This is something that they obviously knew was a very strong possibility. You could not know it. It happens in all other forms of diseases out there. So that is a very good news. So now that goes into the whole thing around the New York State and New York City. This narrative that their strict lockdown measures stopped was what's resulted in nearly a zero death rate. I don't believe that narrative is correct. What I believe was what happened
thorough,
is
thoughtful measures from New York, the same New York where the governor shipped people out of the hospital and put them in convalescent homes and killed a bunch of people.
Exactly.
Those kinds of thorough, thoughtful measures.
Well, what I actually really believe happens that I think that fits the facts better is you had widespread, and by the time they started doing these lockdown measures, and for a second, let's put aside the fact that, yes, Governor Cuomo did shove infected people. By the time you'd already done it, the cow was already out of the door. The virus was running rampant through the population, and you started to see deaths associated to that initial infection rate. Then you had people come to the hospitals that were healthy, but there was a period of time in New York where significant transmission of the disease while people were in the hospital was being transmitted. Then you had the things like the Governor Cuomo sending people to the health, and that kept it going. But essentially, their lockdown measures had very little to do with shutting down or flattening the curves. What really happened is New York reached herd immunity, or what I call community immunity, and that goes back to what the T cell. When you
throw, and that was probably slowed down by being locked down so much. If they could have gotten outside, taken a walk in Central Park, breathed some fresh air,
possibly.
But they weren't even allowing people outdoors in those days.
But let's go back to this T cell. When you put in the T cell immunity and resistance, and then you start talking about herd immunity, and you talked about the variability. Each individual has a variable resistance to COVID-19, and you factor that in there. What you do is, depending on the average variability, the average resistance the average person has, the herd immunity can drop all the way down to 10%. In other words, if 10% of the people get COVID-19, you've achieved herd immunity. To 20%, to 30%, the odds are that the herd immunity is going to be reached far, far below the 60, 70% numbers you've seen. And we saw New York just back in May, 22% of New York City people had the antibodies for COVID-19. So you move ahead 2 months, what percentage of people had there? I am convinced that and we'll continue to see this, that New York State and the city achieved effectively near community immunity, the same thing that was achieved by Sweden, which, by the way, now has almost zero deaths happening every day as well. And they didn't do they didn't crush their citizen civil rights. They didn't lock. They let the kids go to school. They let people get together. They didn't have the gigantic uptick in suicides we have in our country. They didn't have the giant uptick or surge in drug overdose. They didn't have the surge in child abuse, sex abuse.
Well, and Mike, have you noticed how the Democrat talking points about Sweden have changed? Every time somebody wants to warn about socialism, they go, "Oh, well, you're talking about Venezuela. We use Sweden as a model." Well, first of all, Sweden's come out and said, quit using us as a model. We're not pure socialism like Venezuela was. But also, when Sweden does these things medically and handles the coronavirus in an intelligent way, nobody wants to use Sweden as a role model anymore. Until Joe Biden gets elected, hypothetically, then it's all going to miraculously go away. And we'll hear that probably Joe and Nancy Pelosi together invented the cure, invented the vaccine.
Something like that. So if you take a look at that, Sweden is running about 570, 580 deaths. I think it's per 100,000, okay? And the United States is running like 440. So President Trump, you know, bless his soul, he's got a lot of good qualities, but, you know, he was dinging and ragging and, you know, disrespecting Sweden. He stopped doing that now. And you're not going to hear him saying that anymore because we're on our way to getting pretty close to where Sweden was, except that we'll have spent trillions of dollars to get to the same place and destroyed the life. And once again, I think there's a bit of Monday morning quarterbacking here. There's 20-20 hindsight. There was a lot of uncertainty, and Sweden made the right call, but they could have been wrong. But we now have the data to know that these lockdowns were not the thing that necessarily, the more moderate social distancing type stuff that was done, it could have been just as effective.
That's very interesting and good news medically. Politically, none of that matters to the Democrats, because right now the push is, how dare you talk about opening up the economy so that when November rolls around, they can say Trump tanked the economy. That's the idea.
But let's go back to what I said a little bit earlier. Florida, California, Arizona, and Texas are plateauing, which means that in a few weeks, we're going to see that death rate start to plunge back down again from 140, 150 down to 50 to 60, start to go back down again. And so that's going to make it hurt the narrative of the press.
Well, I appreciate your being optimistic. Right now we have cities being destroyed, literally destroyed, burnt down police departments. And they're still floating this narrative that there are a bunch of peaceful protesters. Nothing's really going on. And people are believing it because the news channels that they watch are saying that.
I think that the reality is leaking out. For example,
well, maybe those that escape from Portland and just talk to their friends about it.
The places where this is happening, Bob, are gigantic, massive, huge metropolitan areas with millions of people.
And there's so much footage. But I'm just saying that we're living in a time where people can say those violent people, that's not real violence, because that violence is against racism. And those of you that call it violent, you're the real violent ones. They sell this stuff. And these are the same people that say a man can be a woman can be a man. And the politically correct culture just buys it. So I to any sensible person, their narrative should have been substantially challenged a long time ago, but there's a lot of people still believing that narrative.
Well, Bob, that is my next segment, but let's just finish up here. Finish up.
We won't get ahead of ourselves.
So we're going to see here is if this is correct about the T cell immunity, we're not going to see these states get back anywhere near what we saw like in New Jersey or New York or some of these hard hit states. It's not going to be like that. And the other thing that is really good news in this area is that President Trump has now shifted his strategy to start talking about doing extraordinary measures to protect the senior population. I think it should have been done earlier, but that's what he needs to do. He needs to do that. He's even talking about putting machines in to do the testing. And this is very encouraging, because up to this point in time, we haven't heard about a differential strategy. What we've heard is one size fits all. We've heard about, we got to protect the seniors, but it's better. But then we've had these lockdown measures where, 20-year-olds at almost zero risk.
Well, they don't even want to reopen preschools and elementary schools. So talk about one size fits all.
Since we're sort of done with that top, we'll flip to this one. I do believe there's some pros and cons for President Trump in this upcoming election. And the biggest factor, though, the one that's going to determine whether he gets reelected, is how he is perceived on the COVID-19 response and how he is perceived by the senior population.
What about how he's perceived in responding to the cities being burnt down?
I believe that is going to be a plus for him. Significant plus, but not enough to overcome.
Well, of course, right now they haven't. I mean, I know they've sent in some federal policemen, but right now that has not been significantly stopped. So it's not a plus yet.
I know it is a plus, because right now there's a debate going on where the president is saying, I support the police, I support law and order.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And that people are seeing that. And they're sending federal law enforcement to try to combat it. And no matter what the media is trying to do, is you still have the people. Listen, but get back to these massive metropolitan areas. Bob, no matter what the media is doing, the people that live in the vicinity of these cities know what's going on. It's word of mouth. They understand. That's tens of millions. That's 20 millions. That could be 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 million people that now know what's going on.
Okay, so that's a plus. I'm of the opinion that if the election is fair, Trump will win. And I know we talk about cheating every time. But this time, the Democrats are making it very clear they want to switch to all mail-in balloting. We know how easy it is to do harvest balloting and doctor the numbers when that happens. So how's Trump going to overcome that? Is there anything? Because I really do believe that if the election is a legitimate election, he will win again. I'm having a hard time being convinced it's going to be a legitimate election.
I'm with you with one caveat. Trump has to focus, laser focus in on regaining the senior vote. That's something that's a trend that has really, he's been hurting that badly. And that and if you take a look, it's like 200,000 votes across four states out of 200 plus million votes, no, over 100 million votes that were cast that determined his win last time. It was razor thin. I know he likes to talk about his 300 electoral votes and Hillary Clinton only getting 227, but it was 200 something thousand votes that determined his win.
You know, I'm not, we don't know whether China invented this virus or not. It is interesting, though, that this is a virus that is primarily lethal to seniors. I'm just saying, it's something to think about.
But most illnesses are, though.
That's true.
I mean, it is really
the flu. And I'm not making any statement. I'm just saying that that is interesting to me. There is a lot of evidence coming out, though, that they may very well have just literally invented this thing.
Well, it
one thing we know for sure is they released it.
It was
they lied about it. They released the virus.
It was released out of their labs. There's very little doubt in my mind that it came out of that lab in Wuhan. So the senior population there, Trump won by 12 or 13 points over Hillary Clinton with the 65-year-old and older. He's now lost that. He's underwater with Biden on that, and you could track it. And with Trump, when Trump talks about reopening the economy, down goes the support with the seniors. When he talks about helping out the kids in the school, getting back to school, down goes the support with the seniors. The seniors are definitely afraid of the coronavirus, and so people.
But if he doesn't talk about opening the economy, down goes the support with the other parts of his base.
Between a rock and a hard place, right?
I know, he is.
And
yeah.
And they the poll that just came out late June 22nd, was published in Axios, I think, but it was basically showed 70-something percent of the seniors, 65 and older, would support a second lockdown.
You know, I am still, despite that, and I do think that's significant, I'm more and more of the opinion that Trump should stop listening to half to two-thirds of his advisors and just be Trump. Because I think it's a good quality of him as a businessman. He's learned to listen. But it's also a double-edged sword because I believe he's done things that is really against his nature. And I think we need to see Trump be Trump if he's going to win this election. And that includes having rallies, even though these Democratic governors go, oh, we're only concerned about your health. Has nothing to do with being a Trumper. It's just your health. I think they need to just have the rallies.
I'm a little bit, until the American public catches up with reality and understands the seriousness, the reason the governors are able to keep doing these severe provisions are because the polling is still supporting it. The American public is overwhelmingly still supporting these lockdown measures. And the Republicans aren't, by the way. But there's the segment in the middle that Trump needs to get. So let's get back and talk about the senior vote. Let's back to the senior vote.
Trump still is one who did well by just going by his gut.
However, I disagree that Trump being Trump was a plus for him in this crisis. His communication style of not being able to have a firm grasp of the fact when he's speaking off the cuff and using exaggeration.
Well, I'm not talking about the speaking off the cuff. I'm talking about the fact that he just should not have allowed the economy to get shut down. And maybe he could have found a better way to phrase. I think Kayleigh McEnany phrases it much better than Trump does. And I'm glad they finally brought her in. But I think policy-wise, a lot of times he's just listening to the wrong people. Well, you better shut the economy down. Otherwise, you're going to be viewed as not caring about lives. I think they could have gone with his gut and that maybe found some people that are more articulate to explain it.
I will go back to what we've discussed before.
Think he would have gotten impeached?
The American people were just terrified. And they were that. And every state that had governors that implemented the harsher the measures, if you had said, I'm going to bring people in to monitor you, how you interact with your family, the American people would have clapped their hands and said, 95% approval for these governors. I mean, they were terrified.
Perhaps, but that was then. This is now. We've got three months. How much should Trump be Trump now with 3 months?
Well, Trump needs to stay the course on reopening the economy. But here's my suggestion, what I believe he needs to do. And maybe he's already doing it. There's already signs. He ought to have something called like a program, very focused, and put some money behind it called Protect Our Seniors. We should be putting in testing facilities into every one of the major long-term care facilities, senior facilities. We should put it in the senior centers, and we should make it available to all the families. And he should really focus, say, hey, we understand seniors are at high risk, and we're going to devote all these resources to protect you. He has to get back that senior vote. Otherwise, Bob, he's going to lose.
I agree. He should maybe pump in free pictures of the Lawrence Welk show into their apartments, too. That would be very, very helpful. Seniors really love that Lawrence Welk show.
It is somewhat therapeutic, actually, if you watch it.
And the one and the two.
Yes. It is. So the senior vote is incredibly important. And he needs slaves. Now, what will happen to, by focusing resources and talking about protecting them, he's also at the same time talking about a strategy that implicitly recognizes the difference between the people that are high risk and those that are not at high risk. And then you could start to segment and then say, hey, we're going to really focus on these high risk categories is what he needs to do. So I think that would help rebuild the support. And the senior population, by the way, which they vote, and they're, by the way, the other thing, they're also, as a group in the country, they're the wealthiest group in the country. They're the ones that have the most money. Of all the socioeconomic groups, the seniors have the greatest. So they actually had the ability to sit in their houses without suffering economic harm greater than any other group. So they're very risk averse, understandably, because it is higher risk for them. So he needs to focus on resources to make sure they're protected. But that also has a good political ramification besides the fact that it does the good thing of protecting them. And then get back to reopening the economy, and then you get back to the good news that this T-cell immunity should really start to heavily attenuate, and it has been attenuating, I believe, the coronavirus.
How about the hydroxychloroquine, your views on that? Because it sounds like they're coming around once again, and it's gone back and forth. They're saying it's really working again. Trump himself has said, if I hadn't said anything about it, we'd probably have it in mass now. How much do you think that's effective, and how much do you think he should come on now and say, hey, I was right the whole time, I told you, and look at what's happening?
He could hold off on that a little bit, but the thing is, he was right. The studies, there was that one big study, which basically was 100% horribly flawed. And since then, multiple studies have supported that it does have perhaps a prophylactic effect and a therapeutic effect, you know, used earlier on. But I think the studies have generally come out and showed that it does have therapeutic effect. There's also a new doctor out of West Texas, maybe it's Barkley, but he has started talking about a steroid treatment that he uses for people with asthma that has been very effective at breaking down the cytokine cascade. The cytokine cascade, which is what happens, which leads to the pumping of, It's a bodily response that pumps really what ends up being poisons into the body that shut down other organs that eventually what kills people. Well, this steroid, which you take through a nebulizer, has been very successful in stopping that cytokine cascade from happening, and he's had a high success rate, almost 100% success rate.
That's probably the one I take. I take a steroid through a nebulizer. You know, Mike, talk about good news. I've never been so grateful to have asthma in my life. I'm just really being lifted up on this program.
So
today.
There's a lot of potentials out there, and then we potentially could get a vaccine. They make it sound like it's inevitable, but the fact is we've tried. We've spent billions of dollars. Now, we've never spent as much
as we have now. And people die even when you get a vaccine. That doesn't mean nobody's going to die.
Right. You know? And, yeah, people don't realize that the vaccine effectiveness that we have over the last 10 or 15 years has ranged from 30% to about 60% effective, or 70%.
Yeah, it helps a little bit, but it's not. People in their minds, they equate the word vaccine with cure. They're not the same thing.
I mean, it's 70. So anywhere from 30-something percent to 70% effective. Which means there's anywhere from 70% to 30% of people that it was not affected with. And vaccines, you have to do special things to make sure they're effective with older people, because they don't just a dose that would work on a person that's 40 years old might not produce enough of immune response in somebody that's 75. So you either have to double the dose, or there's a special drug that helps potentiate it and makes it more effective. So we don't know for sure that a vaccine is going to happen. They make it sound inevitable, and I don't think there's any disease in the history of the world that has had more money and resources spent on it. So maybe that is going to do it. But when we get back to this whole T cell stuff and reaching herd immunity or community immunity, which I like that term better, we could reach community immunity and still be looking very similar to the kind of the relatively still low rate that Sweden had. You know, it would be, you know, double what a big flu season is, but nothing like the Armageddon we were talking about, you know, at the beginning with 3 or 4%. It would, you know, maybe be instead of 0.2% infection fatality rate. It could be maybe 0.4, you know, and that's talking about the people that are vulnerable to it, the ones that really show the symptoms.
Now, assuming that a lot of people just don't follow science and medicine and that they can always drag on some other doctor that says something different, back to the simple talking points that Trump should, as you again put it, focus on a laser beam to win this election in the time we have left. What are some more?
One is he just needs to continue the emphasis of being a law and order president. He's getting the unions. The unions, now the rank and file law enforcement people were supporting him last year, almost 80%. Now the unions
are... If the Democrats lose the unions, they've lost quite a bit.
The law enforcement unions are starting to endorse Donald Trump, law enforcement organizations. And those typically don't vote for law enforcement issues. They vote for union issues. But the Democrats have become so extreme and so hostile to law enforcement, the unions are now starting to support him. So in that case, so strong law and order, two, protect the vulnerable populations. That's there. And then the other thing that I do want to finish up here before is that a study came out that showed that 77% of people that describe themselves as conservative are afraid to express their opinions openly.
The silent majority we keep hearing.
But 58% of liberals are very comfortable expressing their. So there's like a 30 or 40 point differential. Right. What that points to is that the Trafalgar group was the ones that in the last couple of election cycles have been the most accurate polling group. And what they've done is they figured out a way to account for social desirability, shy Trump voters. Well, they've done some polling, and I did some analysis on the polling and compared it to other polling. And I believe that the shy Trump voters, the ones that aren't showing up at the polling, is between 6 and 8%. Now, that's not enough to put him ahead of Biden, but that puts him easily within striking distance.
But you factored that in before. Folks, those of you that have been following my show know this, but Mike was one of the few people in the country who called the election for Trump within 1 week of the election. Actually, it was within days of the election, and he did it on this show. So listen to this guy. He does a lot of research. He usually knows what he's talking about.
I'm not calling it for Trump yet.
You're not yet, but you did. But I remember last time you factored in that silent majority. I wanted to ask you about another factor because Trump was doing fantastic with African-American voters. I think the conventional wisdom right now would say that all got flushed away because of the riots and the George Floyd. But I heard a recent Rasmussen poll. I don't remember the percentage, but it was pretty high with African-American supporters despite everything. And there have been some liberal civil rights attorneys that have been coming on Fox News. And I've been hearing these guys just lambast Trump for years. And they're now saying, Trump, I'm going to vote for you. So I that's another piece of good news that I don't think a lot of people are grasping.
I think that Trump will do way better. I think he's going to do significantly better than he did in the last election cycle. I'm not sure. You know, we see numbers like 30%. I don't really think we're going to see that.
But Rasmussen has been one of the more accurate polls.
They've been accurate with a slight bias toward the Republican, but they've been consistent. I consider them to be one of the more reliable polls.
But I do think, we keep talking about Black Lives Matter. The greatest casualties in our inner cities to this violence have been African-Americans, right, including babies, toddlers, African-American police officers, business owners.
Young
it goes
black
on
men.
And on and on.
Young black men.
And so they want to be safe. They know, and
I do believe, you know, I believe that Trump will do better with the black vote than anybody done has done.
And he does
history.
Pretty well with Hispanics, too, despite all the border
and
stuff.
And I think that he'll exceed his Hispanic vote. While all this goes back to one thing, how he handles the COVID. Because all these other factors are significant. But COVID-19 is the monster.
Yeah.
Unless he gets a handle on that, if we're still dealing with this kind of mindset that we have right now around COVID-19, I don't think he's going to win.
Well, okay. Yeah, and I'm sure everybody and their brother around him saying, you're doing better, for Pete's sakes, don't tweet. But that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So let's just pray that the tweets aren't that bad. Well, Mike, we have just a literal seconds. Any quick parting thought?
No, I think that Trump can still pull this election off. I think that he really does. And I go back here. The senior vote is always key. He's got to bring back that senior vote. If I can leave with one thought there, and also that there is really good news. It may take a while for it to percolate through the population, but the science and the data support some very good news about the coronavirus.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of intense stuff, some good news, some concerning news, but there is reason to be optimistic. Even if you're not feeling optimistic, you can pray. We'll be right back.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.